Hi, Mike Friedman. Welcome to KABU to continue discussing the COVID pandemic and those yet to come.
Hi, Bill. Good to be with you again.
Mike Friedman is an evolutionary biologist studying microbes, teaching and writing in the biology department in the University of Antigua and Barbuda. For the last several years, he's been studying and writing on the development of dangerous viruses around the planet, including COVID-19. It's well on its way to killing over 500,000 people in this country by the end of the month, close to 3,000 per day. And that's only officially. It's surely an undercount because many die at home, never diagnosed, and that death toll could go astronomically higher if any of the variants now surfacing are not impacted by the current vaccines, which is quite possible. So, Mike Friedman, lots of people are clamoring to open up, especially in the schools, although perhaps more are reluctant to send their kids. Lots of parents will want the schools to open. But in any event, Biden has announced an intention to open the schools in 100 days. Randy Weingarten, the national president of the American Federation of Teachers, wants to reopen, but only when they are safe, but she's apparently very flexible about that. In addition, and more important, as you point out, our financial and business elites, especially the big companies, are unanimous in wanting to stay open, and they haven't even been politically challenged. Further, people all over the country, with Trump in the lead, are rebelling against any steps to halt the virus, even masking. And many states and cities have already functionally reopened, and reopening is sure to greatly increase in the next months. It appears that our political and corporate elites are banking on, the more informed people in the elites are praying, that the vaccines work and against all the variants. But that is very dubious. Mike Friedman, tell us about the limitations of the vaccine and the risks that the variants pose.
Okay, so the vaccine, as quite a few people, experts, have noted, is not a magic bullet. People hold out the illusion that the vaccine is going to produce herd immunity. And these vaccines are not actually designed to do that. So the first problem with the vaccines is that they're not meant to block transmission of the virus. They're meant to block the symptoms of the virus, to block the severe symptoms of the virus. So they will, and they're effective at that. In the case of the Moderna and the Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, they prevented upwards of 90% of deaths and severe hospitalizations. So they do that job. But the problem is that the way the immune system works, you have a component of your immune system which produces antibodies in circulation, and you have a component of your immune system which produces antibodies in your mucous membranes. These vaccines induce antibody production in circulation, and they produce an antibody called IgG. That means they will lower the viral load in your blood and viral reproduction in your cells. They don't affect what's known as IgA, immunoglobulin A, if I'm getting that right, which is the antibody which is produced in your mucous membranes, which means they don't block transmission, they don't block infection, which means you're transmitting and being infected by the virus. So
there's no herd immunity then, basically.
Well, herd immunity is based on transmission, right? So it's incorrect to talk about herd immunity. The AstraZeneca virus showed itself to be 60% effective in halting asymptomatic cases, which means that it does affect transmission, but the way it's affecting transmission is simply by lowering the viral load in your blood or in your system. It doesn't stop transmission. Even if 60% is a uniform effectiveness of the virus, that's not enough to induce herd immunity. So that's the first problem.
Then there's a variant problem.
That's what I was going to get at. So the second problem is the production of mutations, basically. Viruses all mutate, and that was expected. This virus apparently mutates less than other viruses, like the flu virus, but it still mutates. And when you're talking about millions and millions, hundreds of millions of cases globally, you're talking about a large number of variants emerging, and that's exactly what happened. And then natural selection takes over. So natural selection favors mutations that allow the virus to transmit more easily or are more virulent. So we end up with these mutations, these variants emerging in South Africa, Britain, and Brazil, which have the potential for replacing the original virus because they outcompete it. And the problem is the conditions that we've allowed to develop with the virus favor these variants. So when you have ongoing cases and you have proliferation of millions of cases and you have socioeconomic stratification, which make these certain groups more vulnerable, you're actually favoring the proliferation of these variants. And some experts predict that by March, the British variant B.1.1.7 will be the predominant variant in the U.S. And other experts predict that by May, we'll have another surge, which will be dominated by these variants. The British variant is possibly 50% more transmissible. And some indications, as you noted, some indications are that it's more lethal or it has a higher virulence than the original virus. Again, with the South African variant, there's a much higher rate of transmission and also a higher virulence. And in fact, in the case of the South African variant, AstraZeneca had to completely suspend its vaccines in South Africa because a clinical study showed that they were ineffective at preventing moderate to severe cases.
Yeah, I read that the South African variant has come to the United States, although the United States has such a poor system of identifying genomes, but they have identified the genome, and the variant is apparently, with our very poor system, when you calculate it, it's doubling every 10 days. Doubling every 10 days means in not too many months, you're going to get huge numbers. And once the numbers get huge enough, doubling becomes enormous. A million doubled in 10 days is 2 million.
Yeah, but it's not pure math. I mean, we live in a very geographically and demographically heterogeneous setting. So people don't all live together. They live spread out in different areas. You have population centers. You have groupings that are more exposed at work. You have groupings that are more exposed in their residences, or in case of homeless people, lack of residences. So it won't spread uniformly, which means that you can't really say exactly how long it's going to take to spread out. But the fact is that it will eventually outcompete and come to predominate in cases in the U.S. And so they are predicting that some predictions are that there'll be another surge by May, even though we're giving vaccines, despite Biden's vaccination.
This is Bill Resnick talking to Mike Friedman on KABU, KABU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Mike's an evolutionary biologist who teaches, writes, and studied the COVID pandemic since it appeared. So far, we've discussed the recently discovered COVID variants from South Africa, Brazil, England, and probably more coming, all somewhat different, and the risk they create as within a society that basically ignoring lots of factors. We also talked about the vaccines and the value of the vaccine, which is to lower the symptoms, but it does not lower the transmissions.
Well, it does. It lowers it somewhat, but it lowers it somewhat because the viral load is lower. But it doesn't block it from escaping from your body or coming into your body.
Yes, Mike, let's discuss what could be done. We could come to successfully control viruses. Some countries have, in fact. Very unlikely that all of them will cooperate. But just as a sort of a theoretical intervention, tell us how we could get out of this terrible pandemic and in the process create capacity to defeat other coming viruses.
Okay. The panorama is that we've just been through 40 years of neoliberal restructuring in many, if not all, of the countries of the world, and in the U.S. in particular. That includes downsizing the public health infrastructure. That means privatizing and limiting access to health care. That means creating other conditions that favor social determinants that produce ill health and complicate our ability to deal with the virus. That means I mean, obviously conditions like racism, like class structure in the U.S., create higher risk for what we're calling comorbidities in the population. So this has been going on for 40 years. Our health systems, public health, healthcare are a shambles. Biden has given indications he wants to bolster a system which has been falling apart for 40 years and which under Trump has taken an even harder hit. So one thing that needs to be done is this healthcare infrastructure needs to be restored. That means surveillance, as you pointed out. That means contact tracing. That means coordination. That means community outreach, that's for vaccines. So we need all of that. But in the most immediate sense, in order to halt the surge, what we would have to do is bring the viral reproductive rate down to effectively down to zero. Not to one, to zero. We'd want to stop reproduction of the virus. And to do that, I think ideally, in an ideal world, you would want to have kind of a reboot where you shut everything down for maybe between 2 weeks and 6 weeks, which should be time enough to halt viral reproduction and shedding, and then restart. And you restart under conditions that we've been calling for since the beginning of the pandemic, with adequate social distancing, with masks, with an excellent testing and tracing system. And I want to highlight the fact that our public health system has for years in the U.S. ignored the workplace. I mean, look at OSHA's record at enforcing occupational safety and health at the workplace. It's not great. Their surveillance has been not great. Their enforcement has been not great. And same with the other regulatory agencies. So we need to begin to focus on the workplace, which is a predominant place of spread for the virus. We need to begin to surveil the workplace, collect data, and have transparency in this data so that people could work with it. You also have to have enforcement. And to his credit, Biden has given orders for OSHA to begin to monitor meatpacking plants. We'll see how far that goes. So I think that with these things in place and a shutdown and then a reboot, that would be the way to go. Now, this has to happen not just in the U.S., but around the world, which means you need global coordination. Don't forget, we're talking about ideals here. So you need the type of coordination that would allow you to monitor and to control outbreaks in this enormous globe of ours in remote areas. So that's basically what we would need. The reality is that we are going to have a patchwork response globally, and the response in the U.S., even given Joseph Biden's good intentions, is going to be conditioned by both the past and by his current adhesion to what big business wants, and also to the political fragmentation in the U.S. As you said, we're an extremely polarized state politically, complicated by the rise of the right, which has been facilitated by this neoliberal policy of the past 40 years. And that greatly complicates our ability to implement these containment measures. So, I mean, I envision that there are going to be, like there have been attacks on abortion clinics, there are going to be attacks on vaccination clinics. So we have to deal with that too. The reality is that I think, in my opinion, that we're going to see an endemic virus, which will be controlled in areas, will spring up in other areas, and this will go on for some time.
It's a grim picture. It seems to me one thing that can be done that would actually save a lot of lives, I'm sure the drug companies, they want to make their profits, are busily trying to figure out how to do it, and that is to find drugs, medicines, devices, treatment methods, whatever it is they can make money on, which they can do now because there are so many patients. They ignore any disease that doesn't make them huge amounts of money, but this one could.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the CDC is also thinking about this and putting money into it. That is, just find a drug that reduces, like the vaccines, that reduces the symptoms and leads to a lot less death. That's something actually that can be done, and the Trumpies will not stop it. They probably don't even understand it. Anyway, they can't stop that. And is there anything that we can personally do to reduce the chances that we will get it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the outset, we need an overall strategy in which vaccines play an important part. There's no doubt about it. But they're not, like I said, the magic bullet. There's also a role for these drugs. And the problem here is that now there's a nanobody treatment which has been devised, which would be cheaper and easier than antibodies, but it would be a passive immunity. It wouldn't be an active immunity where your immune system is engaged in churning out antibodies. There are various pharmaceuticals which have appeared. And the problem is with the private pharmaceutical industry, profits are always going to be the bottom line. They're not going to produce them, and they're not going to distribute them unless they're going to make money. And some of these are very expensive, some of these drugs. So how are you going to get them to poor communities in the mountains in Ecuador? People can't afford them there. And already we have a big gap in terms of vaccines being delivered to the global south. So I think one thing that we need to consider is taking this production, well, maybe distribution initially, but production later, out of the hands of the pharmaceutical companies. And there's been a move to de-patent the vaccines, for example. So I think that we need to look at this in terms of an overall strategy, which includes some individual behaviors, but I would downplay individual behaviors, because individual behaviors, and as health educators would say, knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs, are formed by broader policies and ideological trends. And we've seen what happens politically when this becomes a question of partisan politics. So this has to start at the top. There needs to be health education, and it needs to be based on it. It needs to be based on engagement with communities so that you're getting community people to do the education. I saw this in vaccine campaigns in Nicaragua where the communities were responsible for doing their vaccinations. So you need to, at an individual level, we need to wear masks. We need to social distance. We need to stay at home, as Samuel Jackson says. And these things are all conditioned by the larger society. So how are you going to stay home if you're not getting health benefits, if you're not getting sick leave, if you're not getting income? If you have to choose between working to feed your family or staying home to protect your family. So all of these have to be taken into account when we're dealing with individual behaviors. So it's fine to say wear a mask and so on, but we need to be able to provide the proper conditions. And as someone pointed out to me, the only way we're going to do this is not individually, but collectively. This has to come from the bottom up. We have to be on top of the administration, and if it doesn't do its job, we need to supersede it.
Mike Friedman, thanks so much for talking to us today. It's a grim picture, but there are points of light, seems to me, and at some point that movement that you're talking about, it's certainly growing, but it has to grow faster.
I would also just like to make one plug. There is an organization which has begun, which includes people like Jeremy Corbyn and others, and people can look for that on the internet. The organization is called the Zero COVID Coalition, and they have a Facebook page which you can look for. It's in Great Britain, but they've had international calls, and they are about formulating a broad strategy to eliminate coronavirus. They're email address is 0_COVID_coalition@outlook.com.
Thanks a lot for talking to us today. It was really good talking to you.
You too, Bill. And be safe.
You too. So long.